When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 268 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Ford Expedition Timberline, the Bronco Raptor, the Honda HR-V, Land Rover Defender Trophy, the reveal of the Polestar 3, Sony and Honda are setting up shop in Ohio, Toyota ditches Amazon, and an update from Electrify America. All that and more coming up next. Hey, everybody. We'd really appreciate it if you could help us out by taking a couple of minutes to do a quick survey to tell us a little bit about who's listening to the show and what their interests are. You can do that at survey.wheelbearings.media, and we really appreciate it. Thanks. This is episode 268 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual-Samage from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakeham from the Fast Women Podcast.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from Nikkei. Yeah.
So are you writing in Japanese now?
So they take my words and then they make them Japanese.
Ooh. They don't just run them through Google Translate?
No, they have some. I'm sure they have people on staff who speak both languages, and they take
they have
my
human
article,
translate.
Yeah.
And then they translate them into Japanese. So my first article went up.
That's kind of cool.
It's
cool, but also the fact that I don't know how to say it is pretty much.
Just call Sam. Sam, who do I work for again?
Sam, who do I work for?
Please tell me, Sam.
All right. So what have you been driving this week, Mr. Baldwin? Or Baldwin-san.
Baldwin-san. I've been driving the Bronco Ripsflar. Bronco Raptor. See, I don't know how to spell any, pronounce anything. The Bronco Raptor, which I have not taken it off-road, so it's just completely ridiculous. You're just driving around way higher than everyone, just burning through gas. Like, every time I start it up, it's like a whole brontosaurus just gets
sucked right up.
I just destroy the oil output of an entire brontosaurus. Of all the Raptors, to me, this is the one that makes the most sense.
Most sense or least sense?
It makes the most sense.
Okay.
Because I still think trucks are for hollow. Yeah. The Bronco Raptor, out of all the Raptors.
I heard about my brain went out of all the Broncos, and really, that's the one who makes. But okay, out of all the Raptors, now I'm with you.
Of all the Raptors, because the Raptors are just ridiculous, and I still believe, you know, if you have a truck, you should be hauling stuff, not trying to. I don't know. So the Bronco Raptor is of all the Raptors the least, well, the one that makes most sense, but it's still all the entire Raptor lineup, the TRI, all this like super truck. It's all ridiculous and insane. And it's really mostly just dudes flexing in parking lots.
Dudes flexing in parking lots.
Pretty much, yeah.
If you bought the Bronco Raptor and you live out in the desert and you're Bronco Raptoring all the time, good. You're the person I'm like, good for you. You're living your best life. If you bought a Bronco Raptor and you just want to hang out in the parking lot, fine. I mean, I don't want to be judgy, but come on.
No, let's judge.
You should be in the desert. There are tons of really nice off-road parks in America. You should be out there driving dangerously.
But make sure you get a winch and some mud terrain tires.
Yes. If you're going to go through mud, be sure to get mud terrain tires.
That's what I've heard from reliable sources.
Yeah. Yeah. The right tool for the job. That's what you want.
Absolutely.
I've been driving around. Everyone who gets in it is like, what is this? What's going on? They're like, why is this car so hard to get into? I'm like, well, you got to do this and pull yourself in. They're like, it's just
exercise. Annoying and, you're getting some exercise.
It's just annoying. It's at a weird height for tall people to get in. It's not really tall, but it's not short enough where you can just hop in. So getting in is this weird. If you're I think if you're 6 foot or taller, it's a very weird vehicle to get into because it's not. Yeah. And a lot of sort of trucks are kind of like that, where if you're shorter than that and it's been lifted, you're like, oh, I can just grab and pull myself up. Well, you're kind of pulling yourself sideways. It's a weird, yeah. So I thought it was just me, but other tall people have gotten in the car and be like, this is just kind of annoying to get into. if you were shorter, they're like, yeah, if I was shorter, it would make a lot more sense. And if I were taller, I would just slide in. So for tall people, I guess remember that. Overall, I like the... I don't understand why there's carpet in it at all.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
That is actually a very good point. It should be like the old Honda Element that just had the washout flooring.
Well, did yours at least have the deep well rubber mats?
Yes.
Okay.
It has a deep well rubber mats, which I'm a huge fan of. But at the same time, why even bother? Don't put carpet in it. Like everything in the car is just like, hey, let's hose it out. And you're like, oh, wait, except for the carpet, it's going to get all gross.
It does have drain plugs underneath the carpet.
Yeah,
see, so you can't hose it out.
Can you just pull them out? I don't know.
I know. Last week, after we recorded last week, I went out to try and clean up the Raptor I was driving that I got stuck in the mud, and the mats, I was able to just hose those down. But trying to get the mud and stuff off the carpet was a real pain in the neck.
Yeah. Don't put carpet in something like this. Why? Yeah. That's insane.
Unless of course you're just going to be a poser.
Yeah, if you're just gonna hang out.
What do you think the ratio is? Humans who purchase this vehicle and actually use it versus humans who are like, look at my vehicle, I've never really used. Percentages. Oh,
I wish it wasn't this low, but I'm thinking maybe 25%. Maybe.
Yeah.
You get off-road on a let's say every 2 or 3 months. Every 2 or 3 months, they go off-roading a little bit. They do some stuff. I mean, maybe they go camping. Maybe they do some proper off-roading. Everyone else, I would say maybe once every 6 months, maybe once a year, maybe just once or twice ever.
Ever in the history of ever.
Which is sort of disappointing because the whole vehicle is made for going, bonkers off-road.
I agree. I think most people aren't going to use it, but really, if you do get this, even if you're not a bonkers off-road person, become that person.
Yeah,
find
absolutely.
That person inside
Learn.
You.
Take a class. Take a class. They'll teach you how to do it. There's there's plenty of classes. It looks cool. I got the orange one with the black and red stripe things on it. So you can't miss it. I was pulling up to pick up someone from Bard. I'm like, I hope you can find me.
Really hard to spot out here.
No, I mean everything about
Very
it
inconspicuous.
Excites the 12-year-old inside of me. Everything about it, just this is awesome. This is great. This is cool. I wish I still lived in Tehachapi with this. Well, not live there. I wish I was there driving this around because this would be perfect for driving around all the dirt roads and hills of Tehachapi. The Bay Area, there's also ones, but you got to go 2 hours away because people live there. Far more people live here, and they've paved the roads here.
I bet you if Mike Levine at Ford gets one of these, and I suspect that he probably will at some point in the not too distant future, probably when it's time to replace his current Ranger, that he will take this thing out every weekend because that's what he does
every day.
Yeah.
If you don't follow Mike Levine on Twitter, he's Ford Comms. And he's Ford Comms, so of course he's going to be very woohoo Ford.
Ford is amazing.
He is living his the message.
That's the thing. He's not like this guy who's talking about how off-road worthy all this stuff is and how you can go drive anywhere in it as he sits behind his desk and never goes anywhere. The man is out there all the time. So when he's like, look at what I did, you're like, wow, okay, you did that in that vehicle. You did it. You're out there in the middle of nowhere.
I don't think he has a home. I think his
Does
family
he? Does
is
he just
a...
have a he has a tent in the back
it's just
of his
him
Ranger.
And his family, and they just like roll around in the desert, and they just they're just living like nomads. And he does all his work, and he's got a satellite phone and satellite Wi-Fi. He's got Starlink.
Starlink. That's all that connects us to Mike.
That's all that connects us to Mike is Starlink. So yeah, no Bronco Raptor. I mean, it's incredibly ridiculous, but it's ridiculous. It's done in a it's the execution is very smart. I really like the fact that there's all a whole lot of buttons. Like all the buttons you need, buttons. Like all the things that I sort of complain about were like, why is the camera system behind the screen? Why is this behind the screen? Why is this in the display? Why is this? All of that is a button. And it's all buttons. Like once you figure out where they are, I'm like, oh, this is the camera. This is where the camera is. I always know where the camera is now.
Yeah.
I always know how to.
And they're all rubber coated and sealed.
Yeah.
You know, so the actual switches are behind a rubber cover. So that when you do hose it out, you're not going to get water in all those places where you don't actually want water to get to.
Yeah.
And you know, to the buttons, you know, there's even the auxiliary switch. I think there's like six auxiliary switches up above the mirror. So that, you know, if you're putting on extra lights or your winch, for example, which you should definitely get if you're going to go mudding.
Once again, the winch.
One of them is like a SOS to come get a friend to winch you out of a mud hole.
Yeah. So you can
call Tom, you can, or whoever it is.
So you can wire all, so you don't have to hook up extra switches. You know, the switches are all pre-wired. And then you can just tie into those wires. So that you've got all that stuff there. So it's a lot less effort to install that stuff.
Yes, yes. No, they've really set it up really nice. I like that the steering wheel buttons are also behind rubber. So if, you know, I've been a Wrangler once when it started raining in Hawaii, and I was just like, you know, I'm gonna bother put the I just don't care.
You don't have to. Wrangler's like, I don't care. Whatever. Wrangler's rain, like, bring it.
Exactly. Which is why you shouldn't have carpet in a car like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it gets horrible gas mileage. Just
no, I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell
horrible,
you.
Horrible, horrible gas mileage. I've been driving around. I think I'm getting like 13.6 mpg.
Actually, that's better than what I thought you were going to say.
I got 15 last week.
Yeah, so combined
and he was stuck
15.
In the mud.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not. It's also not cheap. A lot of people have come up to me like, well, how much is this? I'm like,
a lot.
Well, you know, according to the Neroni they sent me over, it starts at $68,500, which means you're not going to get
you're never getting that.
And that cost. It's in the code orange. That's the color I got, which is cool. I really like that orange. But it, you know, what did they throw? They threw a $3,000 leather trim suede seats in there. No.
No, because you're going to ruin this. Even if the leather survives the suede part.
You want vinyl.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just, yeah. Then interior carbon fiber pack? No.
What's that one? There's the one of the trims of the not the normal-ish Bronco has marine grade vinyl in it to like, I can't remember. There's one, and I'm like, that's the one I want.
I think the base one.
Is it the base one?
I think you can get the base one with that marine grade vinyl.
I want that in my.
Or maybe it comes with like if you get the base one with the Sasquatch package.
Yeah, I can't remember the details on it, but I remember seeing it and thinking it actually looks cool. It doesn't look horrible, and I'm like, marine grade. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then it comes. What's it? Oh, there's a code orange seatbelt. That's $400. Yeah, just get that.
Seatbelt? Oh my god.
$400. But then they have the key. They have the keyless entry keypad, which is $110. I feel like that's the best $110 you can spend, especially if you're someone who likes to swim.
Yeah.
You know, or surf or sail or whatever, and you don't want to get your electronics wet, or if you're a surfer or a swimmer. You don't have anywhere to put that key, and you can take it apart and do that whole thing, or you can just use the keypad. Total price for the Bronco Raptor they dropped off my house, $81,085.
That's a lot.
Which is so much money.
That's a lot of money.
It's so, and I look and I tell people.
And if you can find one, a dealer's probably going to charge you anywhere from $20,000 to $40,000 markup on top of that.
Right.
More. Yeah, it's I don't know. I feel like at some point, hopefully in the future, people will be able to buy these at just the regular MSRP of
68,000,
you know, $70,000. But also, you know, the EV powertrain on the F-150 Lightning is so great.
It's really good.
And I look forward to seeing that on this. Maybe not the Raptor, because it's, again, but
he's like, it's a Raptor. Don't do that.
The Raptor, it's got a little very
resistance from those tires.
Yeah. These are like the Lamborghinis for people who want to at least present themselves as off-roaders. You know,
that's
I mean?
Well like a lot put. Of people,
Lamborghini people don't go to, you know, a majority of them go, they drive them around town, they go to the club. It's very much a show-off vehicle, even though those Lamborghinis are, you know, for the most part, they're wonderful vehicles. They're great on tracks. They're fun to drive. But, you know, I'm at the club lifting it up, and it's my Instagram mobile. I think this is like a sort of an Instagram mobile. So,
fair.
Bronco Raptor, you buy the Raptor. I will chase you down unless I find out you are going to going off road. If I can follow you in your Raptor for an entire month in my BRZ, I'm very disappointed in you.
That's it. And you should, as we should be. We should all be disappointed. You should get the license plate. We should shame them.
Anyway, no, Bronco Raptor, fun. I haven't had a chance to take it off road. I took the regular Bronco off road. It was great. Yeah. I'm sure this is great tour. Or at least faster for reasons that are unknown to me. But yeah, there you go. Bronco Raptor.
Rawr. All right.
I'm Nicole. Ready now. I am ready now. Okay. I've been calling it the HERV. It's the Honda HRV, and I've been referring it to the HERV all week. So I have the Honda HERV, which the HRV is all new this year, and it is a vastly improved vehicle. Let's start. This is like not the top of the Honda lineup. This is your like base level crossover. I just graduated college. I don't have a lot of money in the bank. I need a vehicle kind of thing. This is not your I have arrived vehicle. That said, it is really so much better than it was before. Like I remember the old HRV, I had to drive it, oddly enough, all the way to Vermont, which I did again with this one, which I'll talk about later. But I drove it to Vermont, and driving that a long distance, it was loud. It was underpowered. It was not fun to drive. It felt every bit like it was an entry level cross. It felt cheap. Oh my gosh. It was terrible. It really was. Sorry, Honda. The old HRV was not good. The new HRV though, much better. It's greatly improved. It has a more powerful engine. It has a nicer interior. It's quieter. Like they did lots of things throughout that make this so much better. Like before I would never have recommended this car to someone looking for this kind of car. Now I would happily recommend it to someone who's like, I need an entry level crossover. Go ahead, go look at the HRV. It's affordable. It drives nicely. You can get it with all-wheel drive. And it's a Honda, so you know that it's going to have good reliability. Like all these, there's really compelling reasons to get this. And before it was like an also-ran in the compact crossover segment. So I liked it. And I like, it's affordable. It starts at, with front-wheel drive, $23,650. It tops out on, there's only three trims. With all-wheel drive, it's $28,950. So even the all-wheel drive, most well-equipped version of this thing is still under 30 grand, which is not bad. You know, it's not a bad price point. It's easy to drive. I took it up to Manchester, Vermont. So I had a good long drive in it. It was very easy and quiet on the highway and had no issues. It has a nice, comfortable interior. It has a good amount of room for cargo. It's got the, you know, the usual infotainment bells and whistles. It has a standard 7-inch screen with CarPlay, Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, but there's a 9-inch one that you can get on top trims. It has wireless connectivity, which is a nice little bonus. It's not flashy. It doesn't have all the fancy upscale stuff in it, but it does the job of being an entry-level crossover without feeling cheap anymore. It shed the, this is a cheap little car feeling that it had before. So I am pleased with this. I drove this at the launch and was really super impressed because they took us, we were in Oregon, and they took us in a drive route that had this very twisty, turny road up a mountain. And as I looked at this twisty, turny road, I remembered thinking like, really? You're having, what, you think this is going to make me think positively about your vehicle? Because it wouldn't have before. This time I took it, I'm like, oh, like now I get it, because there is a difference. It does drive so much more nicely than the old one. So I would recommend it now. I like it. Have you guys driven the new HERV?
Not yet. It's been several years since I drove the old one. And the thing that always struck me about the old one, I actually preferred the design of the old one.
Okay.
I thought it was a more interesting. The new one looks a little bland, to
That's
be honest.
Fair. Okay. Yeah. You know?
I like the design of the old one. Mm-hmm. And I like the packaging of the old one. My only real complaint about the original HRV was the powertrain was terrible.
It was awful.
The old HRV was based on the Honda Fit platform. The new one's based on the Civic, which is why it's so much larger than the old one. I mean, it's really moved up. The new HRV is really what the CRV used to be.
Yeah.
And the CRV is also moved up and gotten a lot bigger. So, and the old one, especially with all-wheel drive, the all-wheel drive version of the original, the 1.8 liter engine that they had in there with the CVT was just a terrible combination with the weight of the all-wheel drive. The Fit was so much lighter than the HRV that, worked a lot better in there, but just not in the HRV. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to trying this one out, even though, like I said, I think it looks a little dull.
Yeah. The looks thing, you either like it or don't. It's not, but
it's inoffensive, but it's not interesting.
There's nothing striking. You don't look at it and go, ooh, sexy looking crossover. But so it's just kind of, it does kind of have milquetoast styling. It's not super striking. It's not really something that's going to catch your attention. For that, I can the style in a car, especially when you're looking for a cheap car, sometimes you have to style aside. Do I like driving this to have the features I need and because it have the price that I want? But the driving the old one was just, it was, like you said, Sam, it was awful. It was underpowered. It was loud. It felt like this engine is not going to do what I need it to do. Like it's going to just kaput be done before I even get off of this on-ramp on the highway. Now it's a competent little vehicle. And I was taking it the route that I took it through. I had to go from Southern New Hampshire through the mountains, there's this mountain range into Vermont, up into Manchester, Vermont. So you're driving some areas where you've got pretty steep hills that you're going up. And even on that, I'm like, God, it's doing it. And it's doing it not sounding like the engine is going to explode.
Wow.
And before in the old one, seriously, you had your doubts. You're like, is this going to break? Is it going to make it? Or should I be calling AAA right now? Like the new one, it's good. The powertrain makes such a huge difference. So kudos to Honda for taking the HRV and turning it from a blech into a good car.
Okay.
I liked it. So can I talk about the other thing that I drove that was a little bit more off-road worthy than the
Please tell us about that other thing.
So I also did this thing called the Defender Trophy Edition. Land Rover has this, the new Defender, and they have this trophy competition, and you take the Defender Trophy Editions, which I want to say there's 220 units of this available in the United States. And it's at their Land Rover Experience Center, which is in Manchester, Vermont. And you do a competition against, oh God, I want to say it was 14 other teams, but I could be wrong on that. So you have a little competition that's partly physical and partly challenges in your vehicle. And it's, I knew both of these things, but the physical part of it, I did not realize that Land Rover was going to try and drown me.
You didn't bring your hip waders with you?
I did not bring my hip waders. Next time I would. So they have this thing. I think the only picture that I've seen. Okay, so do you guys know who Ant Anstead is? Kind of a well-known guy. If you go to his Instagram, you'll see a picture of him and he's on this random floaty thing running across it. I had to run across that thing, people. And it's like, imagine the little float you put in the water that you swim to in the summer in your lake. That's really nice. And it's like grounded, but they put this sort of like temporary bridge kind of thing that as you ran across the bridge, it sunk into the water 2 feet or so. So you had to keep a pretty good pace because if you stop too much, you would sink, or you could be like me and have absolutely zero coordination and fall. And I fell enough times. I finally got out there, got the key off the little raft. And then the way back, I'm like, I am already soaking wet. So I literally crawled back across it. So I was drenched. So it was a bit more physical than I had realized. And 45 degrees soaking wet jeans, not my favorite. So it was a little bit of a challenge, but then that was just the morning part where it was like the hiking and doing that. And it was still super fun. Cause we're all laughing our butts off at each other. Cause it was ridiculous. But then we went, and then we had all these little competitions, challenges that we had to do in the vehicle. So they were set up in different stages. You had a little map to get to things. You had to do everything from, like, they kind of made a box. It was like, looked sort of like pool noodles that they made in a giant circle. And you had to go in there and turn around as quickly as you can in this tiny little tight circle without popping any of the flags. You had to do it. Then your drive partner had to do it. Then you had a thing that had nothing to do with anything. You had these three wooden stakes. And your flag that you had to make, you had to have a team flag. And then you had rubber bands. And again, with the pool noodles, see the water theme going through the whole thing. You had to make a flag and it had to stand for at least 20 seconds and they had to measure how high you got it. And it was really like, you had rubber bands, a pool noodle and stakes. So then there was another section that was more like about driving the vehicle. So you had a thing where you had towing and this huge trailer and you had to see how far you could get going through cones that were like, unless I towed all the time, there was not a snowball's chance that I wasn't taken at every cone on that course. There was like a one where you had to look at a little map and it was just like, again, little stakes. And it was, you had to like direct your drive partner through it, but you had to like look at the map for a few minutes, hand it back to the person in charge and remember. It was like your memory thing. My memory is only so-so, I've discovered. So I don't know if that was a challenge. You had one where you had really tight turns that you had to navigate. You had a thing where you used like a high lift jack to do stuff. You had an off-road thing where there was mud and there were like navigating really tight corners, you know, when you're sort of on steep, you know, inclines this way and that way. You had a thing where you had to hook up these pulleys to the front of the vehicle and around a tree. And then you had to use the pulleys. You couldn't actually pull the vehicle, like, I don't know, maybe like 5 feet just on manpower, but you had to hook all the pulleys and the pulleys took the weight. So it was easier. Engineering man Sam could explain this. It was easier because of the pulleys instead of just like yanking the bumper of the car or pushing it. So we had to do that. So it was this like combination of little bit of physical challenges with clues to find your keys in the beginning, and then all these off-road challenges. It was really fun because the teams were everything from like, there was a Canadian journalist team. There was a couple of outdoor magazine folks, but then a lot of them are just regular old Joes. They're like literally people who bought a Defender. So they're just regular folks competing in this. So it was this really interesting range of people from around the country who were super duper like fans of their vehicle, which is always fun to have people. Like if you're a super fan for whatever car you have, it's just fun to see that kind of passion. No matter what the vehicle is, whether it's a Hellcat or whether it's a, you know, a Land Rover Defender, it's fun to see that kind of excitement. So they were really excited about it. And then they did have a competition where there's the winning teams like eventually move on and they can compete in the UK, which of course the media people weren't part of that, but the owner people are part of that. So that was pretty cool. So there's some, and they give you, if you're an owner, you get cool swag, you get a little sweatshirt, you got a little beanie and a baseball cap and a funky little backpack that I'll say Defender trophy. So it was a neat thing. So it was part like competition, part have fun with your car, part just kind of socializing with people who are as passionate about your vehicle. Cause you're not going to do something like this. Probably not going to buy a one of 220 Defender trophy edition to begin with, if you're not a huge fan of the vehicle, you know? And some of these folks have had a variety of Land Rovers like forever. Like, oh, this is my 8th Land Rover. This is my 9th. Well, I've got 2 in the garage. So it's just, it was an interesting mix of people. And because it was close by for me, like some of these, I'm in New Hampshire, Vermont, it was like a 2-hour drive. Some of these people were coming from Atlanta and Texas. Like they were from far away. So they made quite the trek to come up here to do this. So a fun time was had by all, and I didn't catch pneumonia, which is good. So it's all good in the end. But yeah, I had a lot of wet clothes. I literally came home and I had to fly right back out to an event the next morning. And I have all these wet clothes because I literally just do. So my husband wakes up, he's like, what is happening? And there's like socks and jeans and sweatshirts. I'm like, when this all dries out, it all goes in the wash. Like, but everything is soaking wet.
Well, why not just throw it in the wash right away?
Because I just didn't want to just do a load with just that stuff. I was going to wait and wash a whole bunch of stuff at one time.
Like, I'm not going to do a little lunch. I do
one
that.
Like with socks and a shirt and yeah.
Like I need some more clothes. And I just start putting clothes on. No.
I know Land Rover has a couple of these Land Rover centers in the US. Yes. Do they do the trophy competitions at the other centers as well, or is it just in Vermont?
I think in the US, in the US, the trophy competition is just at the Experience Center in Manchester, Vermont. So if you're in the US, you're coming here. What's that? Honest.
If you look at Vermont, you look at Rand Land Rover sales, you're like, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like, yeah, it's like it's spot on. So, yeah. So if you're doing that here, you're going to Vermont, which is actually also beautiful because it's October. So it's foliage season. So the drive up was gorgeous. So you had all, and even just running around, there's like leaves everywhere. And it's like, oh, look at the New Englandiness of New England. It was really cute. So that was fun. So it was an interesting, it was a fun challenge. It was fun to see the people getting really into it. And there was a certain camaraderie in that, although there, like, there's people that are hardcore competing because like somebody could go to the UK at the end of this, right? But there was also a sense of like, this is kind of fun too. Like, we're all just having a good time with this, you know? So it was cool. I enjoyed myself, even though I almost died in a lake, but I didn't. So it's all good.
Well, we're glad you didn't die in a lake.
Thanks.
The lady of the lake.
I would have been the lady of the lake, and so I would have had swords to throw at people. Okay.
You get a sword, and you get, you a, get sword. A sword.
No, I would have thrown Defender trophies at people. Here you go.
You get a Defender trophy.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. All right. Well, I had the Ford Expedition Timberline 4x4 this week in Oxford White. And the Expedition got a mid-cycle refresh this year for the 2022 model year. So basically a revised front fascia, some, you know, like some changes to the taillights and, you know, some assorted other minor things. And then the biggest thing was the addition of this Timberline trim level, which we've seen Ford add to some of their other SUVs, like the Explorer. And I think there might be a Timberline Bronco Sport now as well, but I can't remember. But basically it's a slightly more off-roady, or at least off-roady looking version of the Expedition. It does have all-terrain tires.
Off-roady
looking. It's got some skid plates and stuff, and, you know, sits slightly higher than a standard Expedition. You know, looks pretty cool. Personally, you know, if I was going to get one of these, I would not get it in Oxford White. I would get it in the, they have this lovely green color.
Green is really nice. I can't believe they sent you white.
Yeah. Forged green metallic.
Choice. Yeah.
Yeah. And with the Timberline, you get some red accents, you know, on the front bumper and the rear bumper, and red tow hooks to go with your skid plate, so that when you get it stuck in the mud, you know, you can easily hook up a winch or a tow strap on there. And then black trim in the grill that wraps around the headlights. So it looks pretty cool. And you know, even in white, you know, it's got a little bit of the Darth Vader, or sorry, the Stormtrooper look to it, because it's also got black wheels, 18-inch alloy wheels with, as I said, with all-terrain tires. You know, but basically, you know, other than that, you know, it's a pretty run of the mill Expedition, you know, which is a full size three row SUV. You know, it's big, and roomy, and this is not the XL. There's also a long wheelbase version, although I'm not sure if you can get I don't think you can get the Timberline on the Max. The long wheelbase is the Max. So yeah, the Timberline only comes on the standard wheelbase version. If you want the extended wheelbase version with extra third row room and cargo space, you've got to get an XLT, a Limited, or a King Ranch, or a Platinum. The Timberline starts at $70,705. It also gets the high output 3.5 liter EcoBoost, so I think it's about 450 horsepower, which is, you know, it's got plenty of grunt, which it needs because this thing is big and fairly hefty. It's been averaging about 18 miles per gallon this past several days that I've been driving it, which is better than the Bronco Raptor, but not particularly impressive.
But are you willing to pay that extra money, because it's about the same price, starting price, as the Bronco Raptor? And frankly, who needs that many friends that you have to fill up an entire expedition?
That's true. Yeah, I mean, if you want something off-roady looking, go for the Bronco Raptor.
Get the Raptor.
Yeah.
Or just the regular Bronco, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
With a manual transmission.
The one that I've been driving also has the Equipment Group 501A. Which is a $9,220 package. And for $9,220, what you get is the same 15.5-inch capacitive touchscreen, center touchscreen that you get in the Mustang Mach-E and in the Lightning. You get Ford Co-Pilot 360 Assist 2.0, which is a slightly more advanced version. It has lane centering instead of just lane keeping assist, so instead of bouncing off the lane markers, it tries to keep you centered in the lane. A 12 speaker B&O sound system, HD radio, and a 12 inch digital cluster display. That's what you get for $9,200.
Yay.
I would say if you're thinking about a Timberline, save the $9,000. Spend the $9,000 on a winch and some good tires.
There you go. Like an HD radio. Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Listen to radio when I can't get CarPlay to work.
Yeah, that's about
it. Why isn't CarPlay working again?
Yeah. And then the only other option that was on here was the second row power bench, or second row bench power fold tip slide, that basically makes it easier to get into the third row. One of the features I do like on this, though, for the third row, it's got power folding third row seats, so that there's a couple of buttons in the back. You can fold them down, which was handy yesterday when I went to Lowe's to buy a new electric snowblower. I just press the button, tip the seats down, stick the snowblower in there when I got home, press the
snowblower button. No, that means winter's coming. Dang it.
Yeah, I know. It's coming anyway, whether we like it or not. So.
No.
All in, the Timberline, the Expedition Timberline, came to $79,660. Guesses on the destination charge?
I have to go under whatever Robbie says.
Okay. Oh, I forgot we're playing this game now.
Yeah, we're gonna see if this works.
$1,400.
Well, then I'm gonna go $1,395.
Robbie wins because it was $16.95.
He always 16. Wins. I think you just tell him.
I was going to say $1,500 too.
I'm actually surprised that, given that Robbie was just driving the Bronco Raptor, that's the same destination charge on the Bronco. So I was surprised surprised he didn't go higher than $14.
My number before I said, "Oh wait, I have to wait." Yeah,
well, my brain works.
I was going to say $14.95, so I'd have been wrong anyway.
Ford's been sneaking up on Stellantis's delivery charges. With that $1,700, because it's the same on the F-150 as well, I think now. And so, yeah, they've been creeping up there. So, you know, if you're looking for a off-roady-ish full-size SUV to haul your six kids around, and all their stuff, Expedition Timberline's worth a look.
There you go.
Just pass on the 15-inch screen. You don't really need it.
If you're a friendless person like myself, just get the Bronco and get the regular Bronco. I'm like pricing out a base Bronco with Steelys on it. I'm like,
you can get those for about 30 grand.
Yeah, well, you can order one for 30 grand.
Theoretically. Order one for about 30 grand, yeah.
And then you're going to spend a ton of money on different wheels and tires and all the accessories and stuff. But so you still end up spending 70 grand on it.
No, all I right. wouldn't do that.
Just in pieces. Instead of at one time, in many, many pieces, you'll spend 70 grand.
You can take the doors off. You can take the roof off. You don't have to spend $70,000 to do that. You can just do that with the regular one.
Let's talk about the Polestar 3, which finally got its big reveal this week.
Polestar 3 looks like a taller Polestar. No, it looks it's slightly different. Never mind.
It's got Thor's hammer headlights or signature lights.
Got the Volvo Thor's signature hammer lights. But it looks cool. I mean, it looks different from everything else that's on the road when it comes to EVs.
It looks good. I mean, I think the style looks
at the
good.
The front, at least. So you got that going for you. No, I think they're going to, Polestar is doing really well in here in the Bay Area because I see them everywhere.
We have a Polestar
dealership in Marin where all the rich people live. So yeah,
that helps.
I think there's one in San Jose as well.
Oh yeah. There's one in San Jose. Oh, right. I took photos of that one. I should remember things like this. There's also one in San Jose. So you get all the rich tech people. And then in Marin, you get all just the rich, I don't know, people.
Yeah. No, I think, for those that haven't seen it yet, the Polestar 3 is a midsize two-row crossover. It's bigger than the Polestar 2. Looks like a crossover. It doesn't look like a lifted sedan. Mm-hmm. It's a dual motor, standard dual motor configuration. With 360 or 380 kilowatts of power if you get the performance pack, and that 380 translates to about 510 horsepower, so it's going to have some get up and go, I think.
It'll be like the XC40, like you get in it, like it's far more powerful than you anticipate. I feel like this is going to be the exact same thing to the Polestar 3.
Yeah,
you're going to get in and like, oh, this will be, oh gosh, there's going to be a lot of oh gosh, like the first 3 days you have this vehicle.
Probably. I like how it looks. I like this one.
Yeah. In Europe, it's rated. They're anticipating it to get about 610 kilometers of range on the WLTP, which is about a little less than 400 miles. And for the U.S., I think they're anticipating about 300 miles range on the EPA test.
Okay.
It'll be adequate. It's got lots of driver assist features because this is sharing its same platform with the new Volvo EX90. Initial production of this is going to happen in China starting middle of next year. And then they're going to add production in South Carolina at the Volvo factory in South Carolina, where they're also building the EX90. It's got 14.5-inch center touchscreen display and then a smaller instrument cluster display in front of the driver where it belongs. This is going to be the first of the new Volvo platforms that is powered predominantly by an NVIDIA Orin processor, which is a really, really powerful processor for all the driver assist stuff and partial automation stuff. It'll be available, not initially, but it'll be available slightly after launch with optional LiDAR as part of the pilot pack. So pilot pack is standard, and then a version of that adds LiDAR to it will be available for order from the second quarter of next year. So probably towards the end of the year that'll be in production. 25 speaker Bowers & Wilkins audio system. It's a pretty slick looking vehicle, I think.
And it's going to be built in America in the middle of 2024. So if you're, hopefully by then they've figured out the IRA issue with the, 2024, you're getting that LiDAR, which is, it's, Polestar wants to, they're still, you know, it's still Volvo. They're still Volvo DNA. So they're still always going to be really concerned about safety. And if you're, you know, when it comes down to it, we expected Volvo and Polestar to have LiDAR because that's the redundancy. It's a safety issue and they're going to put it in there.
Yeah. It'll have support for 250 kilowatt DC fast charging. It's still a 400 volt electrical architecture.
Yeah, which is weird. How they must really be pushing it to get 250.
Yeah, I think you know, probably going fairly high current to get that. What else? 2,200 kilo towing capacity. So that's about 4,700 pound towing capacity. But you know, keep in mind this is an EV, so you probably don't want to tow too big of trailer too far.
Yeah, don't try to tow your horses to the next state.
Yeah.
You know what I like about this press release is that it has everything. At the very bottom, like we sometimes when a new car is unveiled, we'll get a press release that has like three pieces of key information and then everything else like, oh, we'll tell you later.
Yeah.
Like Polestar's like, here's everything. Here's how much it weighs. Here's the drag coefficient. Here's the drag force. Here's the charging capacity. Here's the height. Here's the. Sometimes they won't like. Well, what are the dimensions? Oh, we don't have that information now. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, how do you not know how big your car is?
You know, the GMC Hummer EVs out there, and GM still won't tell us what they won't officially say what the battery capacity is, you know, or give us a range. They barely talked about the weight of it, but. I mean, that's for obvious reasons, I think.
Yeah.
You know, they only highlight a few select specifications. You know, trying to find all the detailed specs is nearly impossible for especially for GM vehicles these days.
Yeah. Yeah. It's meanwhile Polestar, like, here you go, here's everything. Hey, they even put the performance pack price in the little thing where it's easy to find. Like, yeah, it's 6,600 euros.
Yeah,
which it'll be different.
You know, the blah, blah. Yeah, the starting price in Europe is $89,900. In the U.S., it's going to be $83,500. I think they've started taking pre-orders this week. So you can, if you're interested in one of these, you can go ahead and get your order in. And they'll start to deliver them sometime in the second half of 2023.
You know, it's cool. If you're What's rich cool. and you can afford this car, there's not going to be a dealer markup.
Right.
That's true. Yeah, because they're doing direct sales. They're not they're not going through standard dealers.
I was looking to see if we even had one. We do have a Polestar in Boston on Fancy Street in Boston. So I could because I was wondering, like, I'm not it's one of the fancier areas of Boston. I'm like, that makes
it's on
sense.
123 but Fancy
Street,
Avenue.
Fancy Pants Lane. No, but I wasn't even sure. I'm like, I think I've seen like two Polestars. It driving around on the roads here, and I thought, wait, do we even have a dealership anywhere that people get, or not a dealership, a showroom? We do. We have one in Boston. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Next up, another new EV that's coming, but not until 2026.
And 2026.
Yeah. So this is Honda made some news this week. Actually, they made a couple of bits of news, but the first thing. Earlier this year, they announced that they were going to form a joint venture with Sony. And we've seen the 2020 and 2022 CES shows. Sony showed a couple of EV concepts and, you know, kind of hinted that they'd like to get into vehicles. And then in March or April of this year, they announced an agreement with Honda to form a joint venture called Sony Honda Mobility. And this week they revealed, they're moving forward with that, and production of the first vehicles, is going to start in 2026 in Ohio. They're going to build Honda Sony EVs in Ohio and Honda's responsible for the vehicle engineering. And this is the part that kind of makes me a little nervous is Sony is responsible for the software platform.
Ooh.
Sony's not got a great history with. I mean, Sony's also going to be supplying a lot of components. You know, there's a lot of the sensors, camera sensors, various other sensors, a variety of other, you know, electronic components. But they're doing the software.
Tony, okay. So I have a PlayStation at like 3. I'm not a gamer, so I just stopped playing. The only thing I have that's new is a Switch. And using the software to like navigate to things on PlayStation 3 is just ridiculous. I also have a Sony camera. I have an A6100, which is a wonderful camera, except you like using the software, like, oh my God, this again. So they make these like really great pieces of hardware, and then they have like, I don't know. Someone came up. Bill over in accounting came up with a software idea.
Bill in accounting had this idea.
And we're like, you know what?
Let's try.
It's Bill's time to shine.
Or not.
Yeah, so that's got me a little nervous about how that's all going to work out. We'll see. I mean, maybe they'll finally get their act together. I've got a PlayStation 4. I've used some Sony cameras in the past. I've also read, you know, reviews of Sony smartphones. Big complaint with their phones, you know, again, like with their cameras, great hardware, terrible software. So, you know, with vehicles moving towards this kind of software-defined vehicle approach, we'll see.
Well, here, the software is hard to use, but it works. Would you rather have hard?
Do you want
to
something that's
works?
Crashing all the time?
Or do you want
and
it to
easy?
Or do you want
that's...
something that works? It's solid. But it's like good luck finding how to like adjust the seat heater.
Ooh, I don't know. Tough choice. But then the other thing that
bring back the S2000 as a EV, and I don't care what the software is. I'm not even gonna turn it on. I'm just gonna turn off the infotainment system and drive my S2000 EV. Yeah,
there you go. The other things that Honda announced this week is the establishment of an EV hub in Ohio. They've got a bunch of plants in central Ohio in the vicinity of Columbus and Marysville, where they've got their U.S. R&D headquarters in Marysville. They've got a couple of assembly plants in Marysville and East Liberty, Ohio, and a powertrain plant in Anna, Ohio. And they're going to be spending $700 million to retool those to build EVs and EV components. And they're also announced that in Fayette County, Ohio, about 40 miles from Columbus, the previously announced joint venture that they're doing with LG for batteries is going to build a $3.5 billion battery plant with 40 gigawatt hours of annual capacity. And all of that is also going to be ready for 2026. And, maybe that's what, you know, that stuff will be going into the Honda Sony EV, or is it Sony Honda? I think it's Sony Honda is the name.
Sony Honda, who gets to put their name first.
Yeah.
No, it should be Honda Sony. I mean, if you're buying a car, I'd rather have Honda in front of the name.
You know, you're right. Because then you think it's a Honda that just has Sony stuff. Otherwise you're like, it's a Sony car and Honda just put in their 2 cents.
Honda's building it for us. Honda and Sony, you know, so after Honda introduces a couple of GM built EVs in 2024, they're going to start building their own stuff in 2 years later in 2026. And will be with Sony and some might be on their own. We'll see.
E architecture.
Yep.
Which is Honda, everything Honda and Acura names is just the thing, what it does.
Yeah.
Super handling all-wheel drive. You're like, oh, well, how's it handle? Super. All right.
Great. Sounds.
What's the architecture? It's an e-architecture. Oh, okay. No fancy. They're just like, this is what it is.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Very straightforward. Very much unlike Electrify America, who's been doing some weird things with branding lately. A few weeks back, they announced that they're going to be putting new stickers on their chargers, labeling them as hyperfast and ultra fast.
What? And what does that even mean?
Hyper is 350, yes. And ultra is like 150.
Yeah.
But you have to like know that one is faster than the other. So it's gonna. I still can't remember which is which.
Yeah, I actually had a conversation with some folks from Electrify America a couple of days ago. You know, after because they had sent out they had posted a tweet about their charging station in Cabazon, California, which is now back online. It's been upgraded, and the text of the tweet that goes along with the picture. This location features two balanced 350 kilowatt hyperfast chargers and one dedicated 350 kilowatt hyperfast charger. And I sent a note to somebody at Electrify America and said, what does this even mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, between balanced 350 kilowatt and dedicated 350 kilowatt and ultra and hyper, just, you know, and on top of all this, everybody's complaining about unreliability of Electrify America chargers. You know, it's like, why are you wasting time on this labeling, you know, instead of fixing the real problem? And it turns out after the conversation that they actually are working on the more fundamental problem of reliability. You know, I'm still not crazy about the branding. Turns out that the balanced 350 kilowatt chargers are designed to support two vehicles charging simultaneously, and it can split it, you know, 175 kilowatts each. Whereas the dedicated is for a single vehicle charging at 350 kilowatts.
Okay.
But
how do you explain that to the regular person when they go up to a 350 charger?
You can't.
You don't.
That's the problem. There's your issue. It's the same thing with Tesla. I would go to a Tesla charging station. Or in the early days, and then it would be like, oh, I'm only getting 7 kilowatts because there's 12 other people here. And I'm like, okay, I understand that, but I see people in their other Teslas just like getting frustrated, like unplugging, replugging, looking at
what's happening. Yeah.
They don't understand why am I only getting this amount of electricity. I'm like, it's like a fire, it's like a hose.
Because they got six chargers and only 200 kilowatts of capacity.
Because
it's just like
getting used to charge. Like you go to a gas station, you get gas, and 99% of the time you get gas at the same rate coming into your car. You don't notice a significant difference because everyone's pumping gas at once.
And if there's one person pumping gas or 12 people pumping gas, everybody's still getting gas at the same roughly the same rate.
Like, so there's this like intuitive like, well, that's how fueling a vehicle works, whether it's electricity or gas, and unfortunately it's not.
Yeah. So the other thing that I learned from EA from my conversation the other day, you know, we talked about the reliability problems they've been having, and last year I think sometime in 2021, I remember John Volker was writing a lot about, you know, problems that he was seeing in the Northeast. He lives in the New York area. And he was writing about problems he was seeing with a lot of the EA chargers in the Northeast. And it turns out when EA first started building out their network a few years ago, you know, one of the first decisions was they weren't even going to bother with 50 kilowatt chargers, which is most of what the DC fast chargers were at that point. They were just going to go straight to 150 and 350 because they knew that going forward, you know, that's what all the vehicles were going to support. But to get their network built out quickly, they worked with four different suppliers of charging equipment. And, not all of them had the same level of quality and reliability, let's say. And, you know, they're
as good as your supplier.
Exactly. And so the supplier of most of the chargers in the Northeast region, that one was they had a lot of problems with that one. And so they made the decision to rip out and replace all those chargers. And that should be better. I don't know. I mean, I'm still seeing John and others in the Northeast complaining about problems with EA chargers. But those have all been replaced. with a different supplier. But now another of the suppliers they've been having problems with this year, including the one that's down the road from me here. And so what they actually decided to do last year after they started doing the rip and replace on that first batch of chargers is instead of continuing to work with a lot of off-the-shelf stuff, they were going to start getting purpose-built stuff to their specifications that has better software in it, better diagnostics capabilities, so they can reach in and find out what's wrong, and figure out, if people are having problems with those chargers, and be able to get somebody out to fix them, and they're easier to repair if necessary. And so they've got a new generation of purpose-built chargers, and I think that's what's actually in this charging station in California, where they had the thing about the balanced hyperfast chargers and the dedicated chargers, is actually this new generation of chargers that they're installing. And that's actually, and they told me that by the end of this year, they're going to have over 50 of their stations, over 50 of their locations are going to be ripping out the second supplier and replacing them with these new generation chargers that are designed to last, and operate hopefully reliably for at least 8 to 10 years.
We both did that cruise, we both did that cruise, the GM cruise event, where they walked us through and they told us all the stuff about how they're doing it. And I just, the suppliers just aren't ready for electrification is what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. They have these big, giant, bulky things that don't quite work right. And everyone's just having to build their own thing. I think that's what happens with what you're, like you were saying, EA's realizing all the people that we usually use for cars or for, all these just aren't ready. And so we have to build our own, or at least we have to design our own and make them build it. And I think that's what everyone's sort of figuring out. And hopefully the suppliers will figure it out soon, that they're like, oh, we got to be better. We can't just be like, we have some stuff lying around.
We got some random stuff.
the other thing that they're changing is their whole back-end software stack that manages, authentication and payments and everything else. They had used something off the shelf that was available from a vendor to start with. They've built up an entirely new stack with a lot more capability in it, and they've actually apparently they've deployed that already now, like within the last few weeks they've switched over to their in-house built software stack for managing everything. So we'll keep an eye on EA over the next 6-12 months. Eventually they're going to replace all of their chargers with these new generation chargers.
They look totally different too.
Yeah.
New chargers.
Right. So hopefully they'll be better. We'll see. We'll let you know. Or, if you run across one of these new chargers, the current EA chargers, they're these white pedestals with a big hole in the top with green trim on them. And the new ones look, they're still predominantly white. But if you happen to encounter one of these new chargers, let us know if how it goes, if it's any better or worse, because hopefully it'll get better. We'll see it better improve, because there's getting a lot more EVs coming on the road.
Yeah. I was fortunate with my drive with the BMW i4 a few weeks ago when they were doing all the upgrades. So mm-hmm. I was getting free charging all weekend. I was like, yeah. But and one of the chargers I charged, the screen just didn't work, but it was still charging. I'm like, good enough. But
that's one of the things they mentioned was the screens, not being readable in a lot of conditions.
Yeah. They were. It just felt like ham-fisted, thrown together, like a Frankenstein. This Las Vegas, they just updated the Las Vegas one. I've charged at this Las Vegas station a bunch. So, look, they've written 350 right on the road. Right in the parking space.
Oh, so you don't have to pull in. So you don't close pull enough in that you can actually read the label.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
Up to 350. Oh, see, that's, there you go. That's the smart thing. I was, when I was charging in the mountains, there were some, it's not EVgo, ChargePoint chargers. And at the top of the charger, there was like a display that said available. Yeah. Unavailable. I'm like, what? And you could see it from across the parking lot.
Cool. I was like, so right away before you get all the way over there.
Yeah. You don't drive all the way over there. And you're like, oh, this one, someone's on this one. And I mean, if you're doing a road trip, you're like, well, I guess I just will hang out. or find another one. But if you're, you know, just around town, you're like, oh, I'll just park over here then. Because I'll look for those charging stations when I'm driving around town. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get some free charging, or I'm going to get some charging while I'm here. But if it's full, I'm like, I drove all the way there. I'm like, oh, I could have parked somewhere else.
Yeah. All right. Last story we've got for this week is Toyota moving away from Amazon. Toyota was one of the first automakers to really embrace integrating Amazon Alexa voice services into its vehicles. But now they're moving away. Earlier this week, while I was in Nashville to drive some new Toyota vehicles, when the press release came out, and I had a chance to talk with one of the Toyota engineers about what's going on with that. And there's no over-the-air software update involved with this. It's all in the back end. The vehicles that have the new Toyota infotainment system that debuted on the Tundra last year and is now on a whole bunch of Toyota and Lexus vehicles, the voice recognition system that's in there is a hybrid system that it has some stuff that's embedded in the vehicle for when you don't have connectivity. But when you do have a connection, it's, you know, whatever commands you give it, it sends those up to the cloud, processes them, and then executes on that. And until now, they've been using Amazon Alexa voice services to power that. And this week they switched over to using Google Cloud AI to do that voice recognition. And they explained to me that using Google Cloud AI gave them much more capability with the voice recognition. It does a much better job of natural language. Because it's tied into Google search and other stuff, you can find all the points of interest and things like that. It's a lot more robust than what's available from Amazon. Have you guys tried using the Amazon stuff in any of the vehicles, whether it's Toyota or GM or Ford?
Yeah, and it's like, oh, you need to sign in. I'm like, oh my gosh.
I don't think I've ever played with it just because I don't know how to be bothered signing in. What you're saying. Like, I don't want
to
do
that. Yeah, you have to sign in, which is like, really? I have to sign in just to use this? This is ridiculous. Like, you know, if you get in a Polestar and you don't want to sign into Google, you don't have to. I don't have to sign into Google. I can be, you know, I don't have to have my stuff. You know, if I get into another, you know, if I get into a Mercedes, I don't have to sign into MBUX, to MBUX to use voice assistant. Yeah, the signing in thing is just, it's a drag.
It's a pain. Yeah, I'm anti having to sign into things all the time. Have you played with it, Sam?
I have tried it out a few times. It's okay. It does an okay job of the voice recognition part of it. It's only tied into into Amazon's map, or point of interest database, which is not as
robust
and feature filled as what Google's got in Google Maps. For music, it'll play stuff from Amazon Music, which if you use Amazon Music, it's fine. But the Google stuff can tie into YouTube Music or to Spotify or, anything else. The way it's set up, it can do a lot more stuff with it. If you've got concerns about, using Google for privacy purposes, I mean, you don't actually have to sign in to it. You just say, hey, Toyota, give it the command and, it just does the processing and then it sends it back to the car and it's all tied in, it's tied into a bunch of vehicle functions. So you can do things like change the cabin temperature and change the volume and so on without actually touching anything.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say, like, drive me home, because it doesn't know where your home is because you haven't signed in, which is fine, because you can say you're dressed.
All right, let's answer some listener questions.
Okay.
First up, Andrew Pappas asks, will we see a new ES based on the new Toyota Crown? So Lexus ES, which up until now has always been based on the Camry. Do you think the ES will switch over to the Crown platform?
No, I don't think so. What do you think? I don't know. I guess it could.
I was driving around one day and I was behind a Camry and an ES. And they looked almost exactly the same. And I was just like, oh, I hope this person didn't like.
How much did they spend on this experience?
Yeah. How much more did you spend for the, you know, and you
for
know,
that, for the trackpad?
It is a different, for the trackpad. Yeah. maybe, I don't know.
I can see them actually shifting the ES to the Crown platform. Because you know, for the same reasons, you know, the Crown, if you haven't seen it yet, and we'll be talking about it more next time, after the embargo lifts, but the Crown, is a sedan, that is a high riding sedan. So it's got sort of a crossover-ish stance to it. Mm-hmm. It's like 4 inches taller than an Avalon. But interestingly enough, it only has an extra half inch of ground clearance. Part of the reason for that, you know, is that they say that, you know, more and more people, you know, there's a lot of people who like the higher hip point of a crossover, the higher seating position of a crossover, mm-hmm. but don't necessarily want a crossover shaped vehicle. They still like the idea of a sedan. And, you know, given that, you know, Lexus probably has a little bit older demographic, you know, especially for something like the ES than Toyota does. I wouldn't be surprised if they shift the next gen ES to the Crown platform and have that similar kind of high riding sedan form factor.
So is the wheel, I mean, who cares about the what do you call it? The clearance, because But is it easier to get in and out of? Is it higher?
Yeah. You sit a little bit higher, so you're not dropping down into the car as much.
Okay. So in that case, that makes a lot of sense, because, you know, it's tough when, you know, as you get older, getting in and out of, lower cars.
I can see it being a nice thing for, you know, like you said, as you're older, I think that's kind of nice, actually, you know, makes it a little easier for you.
It's just like, oh, this, I can just slide straight in and slide straight out. That's what you want to look for.
That's the goal.
If you're older and you're like, oh my God, if get in and out of the vehicle you're shopping for, see how it feels getting in and out. Because if you can just slide right in and slide right out, you're going to be so much happier in the long term.
All right. Adam J asks, how do you feel about extended warranties? I have a Mach-E and plan to keep it past the 3-year warranty expiration, but worry about how much expensive tech is in new cars nowadays. Even my doors have actuators in them. Would never have considered a warranty 15 years ago, but now, what do you think? Would you spend the money on an extended warranty?
No.
Here's the thing, is I'm a handy guy, so I'll just fix things after the warranty goes out. If you're not a handy person, especially
how long did they say they're keeping the car for? Wait, I gotta double check.
Beyond the 3-year warranty.
I mean, how often do you have? I mean, realistically, versus what you pay for the warranty, how often do you have catastrophic meltdowns after year three? I mean, things go wrong. Right, like when you think about
biggest problem is the battery, and the battery's like what, 8 years, 10 years?
Eight years, 100,000 miles on the battery.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, I probably wouldn't get it. I wouldn't. I mean, if you're rich and you're just like, I don't want to ever think about
it. I don't have to deal with it. And if you're rich, you just go buy another car. Oh, this broke. Well, get a new one.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
go ahead.
No, I don't know what I was going to say.
The thing about extended warranties is they generally don't come from the manufacturer. They're usually provided by a third party. And you need, if you're thinking about an extended warranty, you need to really read through it in detail, because there's usually a lot of caveats, a lot of deductibles. I've never bothered with an extended warranty, except for one time. One time we got an extended warranty for a couple of years on a VW that we had, and it turned out to be a complete waste of money, because when we actually needed to use it, the problem was not even covered under the warranty. There tends to be a lot of fine print in extended warranties, and they're usually a very high profit margin thing for dealers and the companies that sell the warranties. The dealers get a cut of whatever you pay for that warranty. And the companies that sell these warranties usually do their best to make sure that they don't actually have to cover anything under the warranty. Yeah, so I, you know, take a look at whatever's available and, you know, make sure, you know, read it in detail, maybe even have a lawyer look at it, you know, or somebody that knows contract law, because there's a good chance it probably won't actually be that useful to you.
Fine. Okay. So A, either A, have a friend who's a lawyer, or B, have a friend that's handy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like preferably, friend, preferably the latter.
Yeah. If your friend Sue is like super handy at things, just like, hey, Sue, there's something weird going on with the door. Can you come look at it? And then feed Sue tacos.
There you go.
I that literally works. Just went and worked on my cousin's car last weekend for tacos.
Perfect.
Or whatever your family.
We'll work for tacos or pizza or any of those things.
I have a large Mexican family, so I got tacos and then a bunch of like other Mexican type things. that like, she just sent me home with. I'm like, yes, this is the best.
All right. Ford recently, AJ asks, Ford recently announced a Blue Cruise 1.2 for the 2023 model year that will mimic Super Cruise's ability for lane changes. Any chance the 21 and 22 models will get it eventually? I hope the current models are not missing some crucial hardware. No, there is no hardware change. It's just a software update. You will get Blue Cruise 1.2 on your 21 and 22 Mustangs, Mach-E's and F-150 Lightnings and or F-150s in general, and anything else that had it. It's going to be available first, you know, from the factory on the 23 model year Mach-E's and Lincoln Corsair, but it will, over the next several months, it will get out to all of the other vehicles that have Blue Cruise or Lincoln's Active Glide. In addition to the lane change on demand, when you tap the turn signal, it will also support proactive speed control, which Super Cruise has had since 2017. Which as you're driving down the road, it will look at the map and look at curves in the road. And if your speed is a little bit too high to safely go through the curve, it might drop your speed down a few miles an hour as you go through the curve and then resume your previous set speed. And just general improvements in the control of the system. So yeah, all the hardware is exactly the same. So no hardware updates required. And you'll get it either as an OTA, or if you want it sooner, you can take it into a dealer and have them reflash the software for you.
So yeah, you'll get it.
Yep. Dan Vesma, we hear a lot about US and Asian brands developing autonomous technologies. Is there any reason that European vendors appear to be falling around?
I think it should be flailing.
Yeah.
Flailing. Flailing around. I have been in the drive pilot, which is level 3 for Mercedes. I don't know, a bunch of times at this point. They will likely have the first level 3 system in the United States. It will be Mercedes on the S, and then eventually on the S-Class, and eventually the EQS as well.
Yeah, I don't necessarily feel like they're flailing.
Yeah, they're not falling behind. I think they're there's a lot of rules and regulatory issues in the EU, which are actually good because the regulatory setup is for the entire EU. They're like, these are the rules. And they're like, oh, okay, cool. Whereas the United States, it's like, these are the rules and every county and every state and every city and every,
exactly.
So it's a little bit tougher for them. So the Volkswagen Group had Audi had a level 3 thing that they just decided to sort of not do because of regulatory issues. They're not falling behind. They just, I think they're being a bit more cautious and a little less like, hey, look at us about it. I think it's like Daimler and electric semis. You can buy an eCascadia electric semi from Daimler right now and drive it around.
Yeah.
But they just don't buy into the hype that I guess Tesla was like, we got a semi, it's electric, and it was like, yeah. Meanwhile, there's like Daimler trucks that you can buy right now that are electric,
and Volvo trucks.
I drove a Volvo truck in Sweden, a big panel a panel truck around that was electric. But then again that's Swedish, it's a cultural thing where they just don't brag.
Yeah.
No one, they're just like, it's, oh, just we have modest. A nice thing. They're like, hey, we have a car. If you like it, it's cool. If you don't, we understand.
It's okay. That's fine. We're okay with that. It's
fine.
Yeah.
So Europeans are doing are on par, are actually doing better than the some of the U.S. and Japanese automakers.
At least, you know, when it comes to consumer level technologies, on things like robo taxis, you know, the real, you know, high level automated stuff. You know, Volkswagen Group, you know, owns an equal stake with Ford in Argo AI. And they, you know, they've got a fleet running around Europe testing now with a fleet of ID buzzes with the Argo driver system on there, that is testing in Hanover and Munich right now. You know, they're also developing consumer grade stuff as well that'll be coming to various vehicles in the next several years. So, you know, and Volvo, you know, has been doing a lot of work in this area. BMW's been doing some stuff. BMW's had some challenges. You know, they initially had a partnership with Mercedes-Benz to do level 3 and level 4 stuff, which then got dropped. And then they formed a partnership with Mobileye to do the same thing. And then we'll see if that ever comes to fruition. Finally, most recently, they've formed a partnership with Qualcomm to develop a system, a level 3 and level 4 technologies for their 2023 or 2025 Neue Klasse EVs. We'll see if that one actually gets anywhere. But you know, they've all been working on this stuff. Based on the number of automated vehicles you can buy from any other manufacturer, like you said, I don't know that they're actually behind.
Yeah, no.
I just remembered, I went to a big event, a big BMW event where they were opening the building for their autonomous like program, and there were drummers.
Was that with the Mercedes partnership, or was that the Mobileye one?
It must have been Mercedes because it was way before COVID. It was a long time ago. It was years ago. Yeah. And then they had us ride
ages
around.
Ages and ages ago.
They had us ride around an autonomous car in a parking lot, which was like, woo.
Woo. Excitement.
Dan Vesma also asks, that metallic noise coming from the back of my car is probably nothing to worry about, right?
So if it was metallic coming from the back of your car, I wouldn't be cool. Concerned. The metallic noise, maybe your differential. Should probably check that.
Yeah, there could potentially be a bumper that's
dragging along the roadway.
Could be an issue with you. Maybe you haven't changed if you have pads in the back or your drums.
Yeah,
there's a lot of metal in cars, and whenever you hear that metal like grinding together, that's not a good sign. So
what you're saying is it's fine, right?
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It'll
all be okay.
If it's just Metallica. If it's Metallica, you're good.
Yeah. Okay. And then Gareth Thomas says, I'm hoping you can do me a favor. My dad ordered an e-transit last October. The dealer said it would take 60 days. It's been a year. There has been no communication from anyone for this whole time, aside from an email a couple of weeks ago saying there have been delays. You know more of the people involved, so I'm hoping you could do a little poking around and see if there's anything more to know. There's a couple things that could be going on here. First of all, you know, if your dad actually placed an order, a factory order with the dealer, you know, and, you know, has a purchase contract for an e-transit, then that should be with Ford. You know, certainly e-transit deliveries have been relatively slow still. They didn't start until I think March or April of this year. And I think they've been delivering about 400 or 500 a month. So they're not really cranking them out just yet. Mm-hmm. And in part, you know, I think part of the reason for that is that the e-transit is built with the same battery modules and the same rear motor that's used in the Mach-E. And Ford's been trying to ramp up production of the Mach-E. So there may be some shortages of components. They may not be able to build as many e-transits as they would like yet. All of that, you know, production is being ramped up. So hopefully, you know, that may be part of the problem. If your dad did nothing but, you know, go to the dealer and say, you know, here's a deposit, you know, or or even if they gave them a deposit, you know, and just said, you know, I want an e-transit when you get one, then that's a different situation. Then you're relying on the dealer having both ordered one and gotten allocation of an e-transit. If you've got, you know, a factory order in, then it's in Ford's hands to build it. But if it's just, you know, saying, you know, I want, you know, telling your dealer, I want the first e-transit that comes in, and the dealer hasn't necessarily gotten allocation of e-transits, then there's not much that can be done. So you need to make sure you actually have a real order in. If you do have an order in, then the next step would be to call Ford customer service, kind of bypass the dealer. And there is a customer service number, which it's an 800 number, which I'll put in the show notes, but it's 1-800-392-3673. Or you can just Google Ford customer service, and that will get you through directly to Ford. And you can find out, you know, has your order actually been processed? You know, kind of what stage is it at? They can help you out. If it hasn't been sent in by the dealer and they're just waiting for one to show up, then you need to actually make sure you get one officially ordered.
A year. That's the crazy world we're in, where, you know, automakers are deciding, well, do we want to sell more Transit, or do we want to sell more Mach-Es, or do we want to,
Everything is so, it's you want to kind of get upset with the OEM and be like, I should have it by now, but things are still really messed up from the pandemic and nothing is coming in the way that you expect. Sometimes it takes a couple of months. Sometimes it takes more than a couple of months.
So. Yep.
I did like that Transit though, when I drove it. That was a fun.
Yeah. Transit's a good van, and, you know, an electric version is bound to be even better.
Yeah. No, it's a fun car to drive, or van. It's not a car.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Sorry, I had to do it.
Oh, Lord.
All right. Well, that's all we've got for this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.